Haven't seen the paper, I highly recommend you go read it, because it basically proves one and for all that that this is not really what you should be looking for, right? You know, like everybody was talking how much the Nvidia prices dropped, and you know how much we're now really entering a different era. But I think Jim Zemlin basically summed it up the best. So Jim Zemlin, executive director of Linux Foundation, again pretty known in the open source community, basically made this point that this is a golden age for low-level open source AI engineering. And hearing it from him was especially useful because it really reminded me of something that I experienced myself. Like, how many of you guys, you know, recognize this email that got sent around, you know, 91 to like one particular mailing list? You know, anybody in the audience who recognizes that email at all? Yeah, a few hands. I mean, I guess we're old farts are still showing up at FOSDEM. This is Linus Torvalds announcing Linux when nobody thought that a group of individuals, let alone one person, could basically compete with Microsoft. Because like Microsoft and IBM at that point, you know, again, not all of you remember, were supposed to own it all. Like that was it. That was the landscape of the computer industry at the time. I mean, there were like some microsystems on the fringes, but you know, that was it. And that email changed everything. Now Linux is everywhere. If you compare it to the email, well, it's actually, it wasn't an email, but more like a GitHub, you know, issue that Georgi Gerganov posted, it's actually kind of amazingly similar, right? You know, a set of principles, you know, like, I'm going to do this thing mostly for fun, it's simple enough. This is what true engineering looks like. And in fact, I will try to kind of tie it all back to DeepSeek. In fact, that's exactly what DeepSeek proved. Because if you read their paper, you get this real clear understanding that they didn't really come up with, you know, too many novel, you know, rocket science level tricks on the machine learning side. They really did just some clever, you know, very sophisticated engineering. And that's what we're all here for, you know, to understand how computers can basically execute these types of systems as quickly as possible. So now that we're talking about it, and again, just as an introduction, what is it that we're even talking about? Because everybody says AI and, you know, machine learning and deep learning, and like people get confused. I actually really love this little book of deep learning. It's by a professor who is also happens to be like a really good engineer. So download it, read it. It's about 100 pages long. You will understand what AI is much better if you read it. But I love his definition that AI is an application. It's basically a business use case of a technology, right? So when you say that I'm doing AI, you kind of really have to talk about the application. Engineering-wise, we're talking about deep learning, which is an application of, you know, machine learning focused on learning from representation. And the way we do it, to put it in the engineering speak, we take this thing called a neural network. It's sort of given some kind of an architecture, and that's slightly out of scope for us engineers. That's where the machine learning people, you know, come up with the next best architecture, you know, transformers versus Mamba versus this versus that. But then we optimize the heck out of it by running that thing on a computer. And we used to run those things on computers, you know, through a variety of different networks, frameworks, mostly done by people in academia, and hence not really suitable for, you know, a quick sort of end-to-end optimizations that, again, I expect to see in a thing that runs on the computer. It's very flexible. It allows, you know, machine learning people to prototype extremely quickly, you know, get to the results. You know, it's a very malleable piece of software that they've given us. But it's not really something that can be optimized. At least not in my case. Although some people try. So there's actually an interesting computer company now called Edged that is making transformers, you know, be edged, like, you know, hence the name, right into the silicon. So they're basically producing ASICs that are only ever capable of running one architecture, and that is transformers. And that is the way to optimize it. Now, again, if you can, if your model is not a transformer, you know, you're out of luck. But to me, this is an extreme case. Because I'm a guy who likes, you know, general purpose computing. And in terms of general purpose computing, all of these frameworks kind of went through these iterations. So they used to be prehistory. Because again, machine learning, you know, started way back in the 60s. You know, and a lot of the architectures like MLP, for example, are still with us in the same way that they got introduced in the 60s, right? Amazingly enough, the framework of the time was MATLAB, because MATLAB is actually super old, you know, not a lot of people know that. And that was kind of PyTorch of the day. Like, you know, your grandfather would go to work at IBM and use MATLAB to basically do AI. I mean, they wouldn't call it that way back then, but that's what happened. And nothing really, not too many artifacts survived. Although if you kind of like Google, you know, PhD thesis, it's amazing how much, you know, what they developed back then is still applicable today, but you have to translate it through a lot of historical baggage. Then, you know, what is interesting, I think we basically had this revival of AI on computers, on actual computers, starting at about 2012. Because 2012 was then, there was this guy, you know, who realized that now he can actually run these types of architectures on a computing unit called a GPU. Because before it was, again, general purpose computers, you know, again, fast but not fast enough. All of a sudden, he got his hands on a bunch of NVIDIA GPUs, and he's like, heck, this buddy of mine, so, you know, some of you will probably recognize AlexNet, a very, you know, seminal paper. So two people wrote it. One was a machine learning engineer, hence Alex in AlexNet. The other, Ilya Tsutskever, was more of an engineer, who basically figured out all of these details of how to run it as fast as possible on a, you know, pretty large number at the time of GPUs. And hence, you know, arguably, you basically had CUDA as his main way of doing it. Because, like, he didn't even have a framework at the time, right? If you go and look at the original source code, you know, it was just CUDA. Like, he literally was programming in CUDA kernels. It's awful. Actually, it's funny, because if you go to GitHub, there's a lot of implementations of AlexNet in TensorFlow and in PyTorch, and everybody's complaining that it's slower than what Ilya did back at the time. Like, it really is. Everybody's like, how can we actually, like, because they take the original implementation, they want to run it side by side with the framework, and they're like, the framework is always slower. Like, what the hell? Like, how can we get back to the original numbers? Now, that was the time when we all realized that we should probably run it on specialized hardware, and Google enters the race with basically designing not a GPU, but a TPU, right? You know, tensor processing unit. Again, a PhD thesis behind it. Now, this time, Google's like, no, wait. We actually have to give people a framework so that they can use this technology, because nobody is smart enough to figure out how to write compute kernels for it. So they basically come up with TensorFlow, and the rest is history. But in parallel, a team at Google was also working on a next generation architecture, Transformers, and all of those three things, you know, kind of combined to create the perfect storm. So Transformers were born out of that effort. Finally, if you look at 2018, OpenAI again went back to NVIDIA, took Transformers architecture, trained it on a whole bunch of data. PyTorch was the thing to do, and that was what I call ML PhD era. We were experimenting with networks, you know, there was not like really a lot of sophisticated optimizations put into it, but that was fine. And that is what people still associate with AI today. What I want you to pay attention to is this last line on this slide. I call it an engineering era, and that is basically, if you look at the architecture of the networks, they're kind of fixed by now. Right, it's kind of Transformers plus plus, you know, maybe it's Mamba, maybe it's this, maybe it's that. But we as engineers don't really have to worry about it too much. Mixture of experts is actually a great thing because it allows you to partition, you know, your networks effectively in smaller bunches, and we should really do a lot of it. Now, what is really super interesting to me is that a whole bunch of next generation frameworks came out of this effort of kind of like looking at it and saying, how can we run inference on this type of architectures, and maybe some training, you know, but I think a lot of them are actually focused on inference, as quickly as possible. And these are the things that we will be talking about through the day today. GGML, ZML, TinyGrad, there's a project that we have in mind. That all of these frameworks that are completely underappreciated, and yet they are basically the basis of the DeepSeek type of an event. Because that is where the engineering is happening, and if you're a software engineer like myself, if you like, you know, tinkering with bits and bytes, this is where you need to spend your time on. Now, again, what are we going to run it on? I actually have a prediction to make, so catch me here in, you know, 5 years, and, you know, let's see if that prediction pans out. I don't think we will be running it on CPUs, some, not all. I definitely don't think we will be running it a lot on GPUs. I think a transputer-like architecture with RISC-V, many cores, you know, type of an approach would be exactly the kind of a thing for which these types of frameworks will be optimized. So yeah, I give you, you know, at least in my view, the inference stack of the future. You basically have a piece of silicon that co-evolves with the one of these frameworks. Again, put DigiGML, TinyGrad, TML, like, I don't care. There's a bunch of, you know, things that you kind of have to do on top of it, because inferencing a model is not just, you know, multiplying matrices. There's a lot that comes before that. And then you give your customers, you know, inference APIs, fine-tuning APIs, enterprise APIs, management APIs, and you sell it as a product. So if you're interested in developing anything like that, I think this is roughly the area, the scope that, you know, you should be paying attention to. And that is exactly why this dev room today is so different from all of the AI conferences I've been at, you know, in the past few years. And I hope the rest of the speakers will make the point I'm trying to make much more eloquently. But I just wanted you to know all of this. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Roman. I'll switch out the... Okay. So here